Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
So good morning, everybody. Welcome. Do keep breathing. And the backside of your Sunday paper does have an outline. I invite you to follow along in that if you wish to. So we are talking the inner selfie this whole month. And we've been kind of, I've been noodling on this idea about this inner selfie for months, actually, as we've been kind of getting ready to lead this. And for me, the basic idea about it has been sort of like, you parents will understand this Lego that got left on the living room floor, and every time you walk through the room barefoot, you step on it, and yeah, and it really reminds you that it's there. Anyway, the most recent, or kind of the biggest one that I think of right now is, it was about a month ago, and I was riding my bike, and I was crossing a four-way intersection, and I stopped. I came to a full stop that time. And as I was getting ready to go, a minivan comes pulling up to my right to that stop sign, but I figured it's going to stop. It's a minivan, after all. Mistake. Ran right through it. I veered off quickly to keep from getting hit, and as soon as the driver realized what had happened, screeched to a halt and rolled down her window. It was a young mom, and she is just like falling over herself, apologizing for, you know, not seeing me and not seeing the stop sign, da-da-da. And it was almost embarrassing. I mean, she was so, but then she ends it with, "I'm so sorry, but I've got these three kids in the back hollering at me." And I'm thinking, yeah, and that's a good reason for running me over, you know? So why did I tell you that story, okay? First of all, I sympathize with her. Chris and I have four kids when they were little, and they were all strapped in the back seat, distraction, chaos. I'm sure I did equally irresponsible things more than once. In fact, we've got a great story about four screaming kids in the back of the car on a highway in Wisconsin that involves a highway patrolman. I'll save that for another time. But that woman's chaos, it was disrupting her ability to be present, to drive when she was supposed to drive, right? I mean, that was her job, was to drive when she was supposed to drive. That surrounds and clouds all of us all the time and more. I mean, what's weighing on your minds right now? More than just those distractions, but what about that heavy stuff that is just kind of follows you everywhere you go? Maybe it's work, maybe it's finances, maybe your neighbors, house, family, health, your partner, your parents, your exercise, diet. I mean, maybe all of the above or a bunch of the above. Are any of those kind of pulling you out of your game a little bit right now, this morning? Then there's the big stuff. Beyond that, I mean, last time we met, before the marathon, 2 weeks ago, we were right in the wake of three hurricanes, two earthquakes, 80 forest fires, and as well as all the other stuff going on in the world. And now, right as we speak, the hurricane now become tropical storm is rolling over Louisiana, you know, causing what kind of stuff? And then this week, last Sunday night, was one of the worst massacres in U.S. history. In Las Vegas, and I don't know, you know, how do we begin to fathom what was going on and what we can do as a people to somehow not have that sort of stuff going on in our midst? You know, just got to sigh. You know, what do we do with all that? There's so many things pulling us away from the moment. Big things, small things, deserving things, not so deserving things. It really doesn't matter. They still have that same effect on us. They knock us out of our zone. They make it hard to be present here and now. So we are talking inner selfie, all right? We're doing this for the rest of October, and you may be wondering, you're probably wondering, like, what does that have to do with anything? What is an inner selfie for that matter? Well, here's a scoop. I assume you've taken a selfie fairly recently. It seems to be sort of the big thing to do these days, okay? Selfies give us a picture of where we are. It gives us a picture of what we're doing and how we look. But as interesting as they are, and just between you and me, I don't think they're quite as interesting as the person who's taking them thinks they are. But as interesting as they are, they're really not giving us a picture of the important stuff, are they? I mean, they give us a picture of the outside. They give us a picture of our facade, of the superficial, our settings. The real stuff is inside where it isn't so easily seen. Not by our cell phone cameras, not by other people, and often, in fact, I'd say probably most of the time, not even by us. So we need to know that person inside of us. We need to know what's going on in here. We need to be in touch with that inner self so that we can begin to shape our outward life to match it. In fact, that's what an inner selfie is all about. You find that on your Sunday papers. An inner selfie is a way of knowing what's going on inside so you can match what's going on outside with it. How can we do that? If that whole selfie thing is a little bit too trite for you, think about the image of a mirror, okay? We have all sorts of mirrors that let us look at ourselves and see how we're doing on the outside. But what are the mirrors that we have that we can look into that help us see what's going on in us? That's something I think that needs to be developed, something that we're going to be working with here. So last month, we spent the whole month talking about compassion, about the capacity we develop and exercise to humanize ourselves and other people. This month, we're going to deal with what helps us develop that sort of compassion. We're going to try to understand, and we're going to try to practice taking these inner selfies, checking those mirrors of our inner selves, and we're going to learn also to recognize when we need to do that, because I think that's an important key about it. The whole thing. So these mirrors for our inner selves is going to be one of the ideas that we're going to be pursuing. You're going to hear us talking about it, and I hope that you spend some time looking for them, trying to identify what they might be for yourselves, because I don't think we're very good at this. And so connecting our inner and our outer selves, in other words, making what we do and what we think and what we say match who we are inside, is an important thing. I think we all recognize about ourselves. I think we all want that to be true for other people in the world around us as well. We call that integrity, okay? When the inside matches the outside, but not just simple professional integrity, which is hard enough. But professional integrity just says, well, I need to match my behavior to sort of an external set of norms, of ethics and things. Personal integrity goes way beyond that. Isn't just trying to make you conform to some external set of things that you can, at least on the outside, conform to. It's saying, no, you need to know who you are inside of yourself. You know, who is that person deep down within that I am going to try to realize and match with my outer life in the best way that I possibly can? To do that, we need mirrors of our inner self. They're harder to find and to learn to use than the one, you know, than that one that's above your bathroom sink, or the one that your bank statement represents, or your Facebook feed. All of those are mirrors of your outer self, your outer life. What are those mirrors of your inner life, your inner self that lets you know how things are going there so we can start to develop what those mirrors are, learn how to use them, and when, and recognize when to do that. So, like Rachel gave us a little bit ago, and we're going to be doing some more of that, one of the things to do this is that to find out these mirrors is to take these inner selfies. We have to use practices that take practice, okay? We need to use practices, deliberately do things, and those take practice. That's right. Distraction is everywhere. We need to be deliberate. These mirrors, these selfies are sort of practices that you maybe already have or that you're going to develop or refine for yourself. And because they do represent something that is different inside of us, something that is different than that mad rush of our lives and the world around us. Because they are so different than that mad rush, I mean, that's why we need to be deliberate. Sometimes they feel a little funny. Sometimes they feel a little silly. Sometimes we feel strange or self-conscious when we do it. Sometimes we think that was very unproductive time because it didn't actually do anything. And that's because they are touching something that isn't given a lot of playtime in mainstream society. But I think we're gathered here because we all recognize that there's some really important things in life that don't get a lot of playtime in mainstream society. And we're here to be about those things. So stick with them. These practices take practice. All right? You got to stick with it. Practices that are as simple as what Rachel was leading you, that help you connect your body with your presence and where you are and why you're there. Practices as simple as your breathing. How quickly we can kind of just forget and kind of lose that life-giving part of ourselves that can help us be in touch with who we are. So breath is going to be a big thing for us, and remembering to breathe and how we can use that as a cue so many times to call us back to that inner self within us. Now, one of the things to know is that none of these practices are magic, okay? They are simply the pause buttons. They help us stop and to check in with what we are learning about who we are and who we've been called to be and who we want to be. Because without them, we just keep going forward with the momentum that we have. They don't fix any things in and of themselves, but they do help us to remember to not just run with the momentum of our lives, which is influenced by so many things. We're pushed and pulled by so many stuff, so many things in society and the world around us that do not have any regard for us as individuals. They just want us to be a part of the machine that they are all part of. But instead, these practices help us to reach our inner selves, all right? It's going to help you to touch your spirit, your soul, your wholeness, the image of God within you, whatever name you want to give it, and to draw near to it and to call upon it to help you set the direction for your life. So what happens when you practice these things? Like, practices that can help you pause and touch base with your inner self. Yeah. I mean, I know kind of how I experience it and what I find in there, and you need to find your own words for that as well. In fact, I'd kind of encourage you to sort of make a mental list or write them on your Sunday paper right now, the things that it feels like for you. When the Bible talks about being in this place and this thing that we seek when we're finding this integrity between our inner self and the life we live, it talks about peace, or shalom is the word in Hebrew, which is really a sense of well-being in ourselves and with God and with others. There's this talk about oneness with God, oneness in Christ, this ground, this presentation of God in our life around us. People talk about feeling like they are more present with other people. They talk about calm. They talk about feeling more whole, being focused. Those are all ways of experiencing it. And those are the sorts of things that we're trying to be talking about here. But here's the big thing. All right? I mean, the goal isn't just the calm. The goal is what that calm represents in your life, right? And so whatever that is, whatever it is your experience that transcends all the craziness of the life, so, you know, you don't feel so distracted or stressed, it isn't like it takes you to this magical place where none of that happens anymore, all right? In fact, that calm isn't instead of all that craziness. That calm is something that you can experience even in the midst of all that craziness, right? In fact, that's on your papers. Calm doesn't come in the absence, but in the midst of chaos. Calm doesn't come in the absence, but in the midst of chaos. So that's what we're shooting at. First, and maybe this is just my problem, I don't know. But I'm always suspicious of that person who is in touch with themselves and is kind of floating a little bit above all the rest of us. You know, kind of reminds me of the movie star who just spent 3 days and nights in the wilderness, but their hair looks like they just came out of the salon, you know? My experience is when you get engaged with the real stuff of life, it messes with you. It ruffles you up, including your inner self. It doesn't always look so pretty. I'm really fascinated. I think it's so easy for us to kind of push the Bible away as this kind of, oh, you know, perfect utopian or whatever kind of thing that doesn't represent the lives we live anymore. But think about the people who are in the Bible who are supposedly in touch with their real selves and God's calling their lives and how they look. I mean, Jesus, I mean, he was like on the run, trying to find a place to be, hanging out with a bunch of scraggly people all the time. Paul was the same way. Think of the characters in the Old Testament. Anything but picture perfect. If the Bible doesn't try to hide that reality of being at one with oneself and one's purpose, how come we try to do it? How come we think we have this need to think that somehow when I touch that place, all of a sudden I'm just going to, you know, kind of be woo and above everything? No, you're not. In fact, you might find that it actually pulls you the other way. But that calm that we find, so it doesn't just displace all that, but somehow it can be present with it and in it. And I think that's pretty important. The second thing about that, the other side of it, is that you don't need perfect conditions to drum up this inner self-dialogue. You know those inspirational posters? We've all seen them kind of everywhere we go. They always convey this idea of tranquility and serenity, the perfect setting. Why do they always have a sunset, you know? Here's the deal for me. Anybody can lower their blood pressure and kind of relieve their anxiety a little bit when they're sitting by a lake with no mosquitoes and that perfect temperature and a nice warm breeze wafting over them and their kids are already in bed, right? You know? Yeah, I mean, I can do that. But that if that's the only place we can experience this thing that we're trying to reach for and connecting within ourselves, we're not going to be doing a lot of checking in because those opportunities are pretty few and far between. I mean, I am not anti, you know, yoga retreat or, you know, finding these places where you can have that kind of set-aside sacred spot. That's great. I mean, find time for those, even prioritize them. But what we're focusing on here, and I think what's really valuable isn't that stuff that you have to go and escape in order to have, but what can I practice? How can I connect with who I am and what my life is about right here and now, no matter what else is going on? I mean, I think that's the goal. And it isn't that you're going to do it perfectly, but that's what you can do. So my rule of thumb, if the practice requires a candle, I'm suspicious. Not anti-candle, I'm just saying, right? I mean, so like that mom, you know, that almost ran me over, I can just see her that morning saying, kids, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to go into the other room and burn some incense for a little while and touch my happy place before I can take you kids to your play dates today, you know? Not going to happen. Somehow she needs to find a way to be present even though the kids are all hollering in the backseat of the car. Not easy, but I think that's where the real stuff comes in. So the Bible has what we call the Book of Psalms in it. It's right in the middle of the Bible. They're ancient songs, actually. They are poems set to tunes that we no longer know what the tunes were. And they're an accumulation of wisdom and reflection from a people who walked with God and one another for countless generations. And they found ways to embody this, like, more artfully. And, it's, you know, people continue to use them. The very first psalm, Psalm 1, coincidence there, the very first psalm sets a tone for all the rest. And it's really talking about exactly what we're talking about today with this inner selfie stuff. It's talking about this grounding in where you come from, where you belong, and how that needs to be there before you do the rest. I'd like to hold up this psalm as a mirror for you, one that gives you a vision of what it would mean to be rooted in that which is deeper than the turbulence of your everyday, yet doesn't hide it from you, doesn't try to remove you from it. I'll read it. You can follow along on your Sunday paper. It's going to be on the screens. But and you can read it or you can just listen, whatever. You might want to make some notes. But let me read this, the first three verses for you. Happy are those who do not walk with the counsel of those who tear down or are among those who have lost their way, or sit in the seat of the cynic. But happy are those who find delight in the way of Yahweh, and on God's word they dwell day and night. They are like trees planted by streams of water. They yield their fruit in its season. Their leaves do not wither. In all they do, they prosper. I did a little translating there to help bridge the 2,700-year-old language to ours today, but even so, there are still a few words that maybe are catches for you, the use of the word happy there, or how God's word fits in, or the name of Yahweh, or the term, or the idea of prospering. Maybe those puzzle you a little bit, so wrestle with them. I'm going to post something on Facebook. Maybe we'll give you a Leftovers podcast taking you into some places, some deep crannies and nooks that I have found in that passage. But what I'd like you to do is to take a couple minutes right now with these verses, okay? They'll stay on the screen. You can read them there on your Sunday paper. You can write about it. You can think about it. You can draw pictures of that tree. You can think about what's it like? What would it be like to be a tree that is planted in that kind of a place? Or maybe you want to think about what is my life like that is so different from a tree like that? And spend a couple of minutes with it. There was some music playing, and those of you listening to the podcast, you're not off the hook. Push pause, and you can do this as well. And so we'll come back after a few minutes. So take some time. Thanks for stretching like that. That's just a little sample, not a very long time. I know this is, like Rachel said, some of what some of you absolutely love to do and some of you hate to do, so that's okay. I think writing is a helpful tool for us to get a better handle on what's going on inside. So like all practices, it takes practice. So if you didn't connect with it right away, don't give up on it. I think writing can be a good thing for all of us. The roots of that tree beside that stream really speaks to me in a lot of ways. What I see is that they give that tree, what we all need, the capacity to withstand things that it wouldn't be able to do otherwise. So that word capacity, that's a big word for us as a community in general, but certainly when we're talking about this inner selfie, we're talking about the integrity, the connection between our inner and outer selves. And that's on your Sunday papers, that you're never going to drive away all the turmoil in your life. But what you can do is you can develop a capacity for living with it as your true self. All right? That's what we seek here. A capacity is a much better word than better. All right? That's what we tend to strive, is I want to be a better person. And I'm always very suspicious of our trying to be better people. I mean, I'm not against better, but it does all kinds of crazy things to us. We start playing the comparison game. It really starts becoming externally focused. So I want to be a better person. I'm comparing myself to things outside of me. Rather than saying, I want to expand my capacity to be the person I want to be. That's looking inside of me. See, the goal, the standard for it is, what is in here and how can I connect with who I am? All right? Anyway, it's asking this question of developing your capacities, like how can you learn to allow the kids to scream in the back seat and not miss the stop sign, you know? How can you realize that you have no idea how to make your office a healthy workspace and not lose your own health in the process? How can you keep hearing the news of myriad life-shattering disasters all around the world and stay in your circle of influence and not retreat to despair or apathy? How can you know there are masses of people around the world, some of them in your family, that are 180 degrees away from you on subjects that you really care deeply about? Politics, social issues, environmental issues. I mean, make that long laundry list of things. Knowing that those people are there, but I do not need to avoid them. In fact, I can draw near to them, and I can maybe even learn from them and with them. This is capacity. This is capacity, the ability not to be perfect, but to expand the situations in which you can be, and you still hear the voice of your inner self speaking to you. Jesus gave us a hint that this is what a life fully woven with God is about when he said that this was his purpose for us. He says, I have come that you may have life, and you may have it abundantly. Abundantly. That's an interesting word to choose, abundantly. It isn't that you may have life and you may have abundance of things or an abundance of years, but that life could be abundant. He wasn't saying that you should have life and be perfect or life and never make a mistake, but have a life and have it, what? Fully, uncompromised, not reduced or diluted by the things that divide us from ourselves and hide the best of ourselves from us. So I'd like to practice another practice with you, okay? So just to make sure everybody's uncomfortable today. It's easy, though. So if you're able, just stand, and you can have your feet planted. If you wish to sit, you can certainly sit. That's okay. And what I'd like you to do is take your hands and put them in front of you comfortably. You can rest your elbows on your side if you wish, and make a bowl out of your hands before you, okay? So this bowl, imagine it as a space for your soul, for your inner self, all right? And catch your breathing. Think about your breathing. Get comfortable with your arms and that bowl. Imagine that. I invite you to close your eyes if you wish. And as you're breathing, Rachel already got you to breathe all that negative stuff out of you. Now, I want you to exhale and fill your hands with that dear and precious thing from your inner self. Your soul, yourself, your inner being. It doesn't need to be captive inside of you. It seeks to be invisible to the world. It seeks a place where it can be known, where it is as familiar as you are, as the part of you that reflects itself in mirrors of the outer self. It wants to be known that well. Imagine what is cupped in your hands, or imagine its beauty and its wonder. Imagine its strength. It is the source of your courage. It is the place of your passion. It is where your skill, your intuition, your ability to love comes from that. And you hold it before yourself like a gift to the world. It is the one thing that can never be crushed or lost. We forget it. We often forget it. We build walls between us and it. But it never goes away. It never leaves us. Imagine this part of yourself there in your hands, before you and before the world. Sacred, whole, wonderful, calling you to be part of it. Now slowly, I invite you to let it go, to make it bigger. Let your hands part from one another and gently reach out to your sides, enlarging the space that your soul fills. While you do that, your arms are probably going to bump the arms of another person, and that's okay. You can giggle a little bit. You can say, "I'm sorry." But we're letting our space overlap the space of other people. And we're letting the space of other people's souls overlap ours too, because we are community. We come here and we create a space for ourselves and for others to be truly present, to live a connected life, not a divided life. So hold your arms out as you have them now and open your eyes. Look around at the people around you. All the sacred presence that is here represented. With us and with God, so much bigger than we are. This is who we are. This is how God sees us. This is our world. You take a breath and have a seat again if you wish. So, thank you for doing that. Do you know you can do that almost anywhere? If you're driving, I don't advise taking both hands off the wheel. But, I mean, you can be at a meeting that you feel your life, just yourself, just kind of being shrunk away from you. And you can, if you need to, underneath the table, put your hands together and very naturally just, you aren't doing this to preach to anybody else. You're not telling anyone else anything. You're telling yourself something. You're claiming the space for your soul. That can be a good thing. You can do it when you're in the presence of a person that you feel conflict with and exercise your capacity, enlarge yourself. So these mirrors of your inner self, again, they aren't about improving yourself, they are about getting to know yourself, capital S, all right? They're not about improving yourself, they're about getting to know yourself. Improving is all about that outer thing, all right? Getting to know yourself is about that inner thing, and that's where we want to go. So you remember that name for God in the psalm that we read where it says Yahweh? Some of you are familiar with that. Some of you, that might be a new thing. Just to be really brief about the story, it comes from where we have where the name of God is first introduced. It's in Exodus chapter 3, the beginning of the Old Testament, the second book of the Old Testament. And it happens in the story of Moses, where Moses has no idea that this is what his life is going to be about, but he comes into the presence of God, and God gives him a job, says, "I want you to go back to Egypt. I want you to lead the Israelites out of slavery." And he's like, really? And of all the things that he's worried about, one of them is he says, well, like, they're going to ask me what God sent me here, and I've got to be able to tell them, so what's your name? And that's the verse that's on your papers. If they ask me, Moses says, what is your God's name? What should I tell them? And God says to Moses, Yahweh. Yahweh. My name is Yahweh, which means I am who I am. Think about that. Who is God? The one who is whoever he, she, whatever is. The one who is one, who knows him herself, who is complete, who is whole unto itself. The same inside and out. I am who I am. So who are we as God's people? We are to be the ones who know who we are. We are to be who we are. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing different, nothing the same inside and out. So improving yourself, getting better, like I said, not bad stuff, but it isn't what life is about. Improving is a product of what happens when we get to know ourselves, when we have that integrity, when we connect our inside and our outside, like God. Okay, a couple last thoughts as we take on this project of taking your inner self in that I just want to leave you with because I think they're just important reminders. First, growing integrity between your inner and outer self is not automatic. If it was, we'd all be spiritual giants by the time Lisa got to be my age. No, nothing about growth is automatic. Although you are designed to grow, growth itself happens because some very deliberate things happen around it. We just don't notice it because most of them are part of the system. You grow physically because you were fed the right foods and you got some exercise. In fact, there are enormous systems in our society making sure that those right foods are available to you and you have a way to get them, all right? And so it happens. We grow emotionally because we're loved and we're shown how to love. We are mentored through our frustrations and we are coached in our ambitions. And when all that pulls together, we then grow emotionally. We grow intellectually because we're sent to school for a long time, all right? Our brains are expanded, our minds are expanded, and they are exercised, and we learn a lot. We grow intellectually. Now, none of that is automatic, but we, most of the time, live in a world where those things are part of the system, so they happen without our hardly noticing. Of course, there are notable exceptions in our world, I know that, but for most of us, that is how it works. Now, what about spiritually? What about that integrity between our inner self and our outer self? I think it has a different story, and that's my second point. Growing spiritually, growing integrity between your inner and outer self is countercultural. If you're going to take it on, if you're going to try to match your outer self to that inner self, you're doing something that's countercultural. You're not going to get a lot of pats on the back for it. These other forms of maturity have cultural momentum behind them. And there's momentum behind your spiritual maturity too, but it's in the wrong direction. The current flows swiftly, and it isn't pulling your outer self towards your inner self. It's tearing them apart. And we know that. The message is to hide your true self. There's probably something a little strange there. You're weird. You're different. Don't let others know. Don't be vulnerable. Hide that. Even from yourself. Instead, we're supposed to play along with other games that chase after easy wins that our inner self knows aren't the real things, but we are convinced to do it anyway. Games like the ones around money and prestige and comfort and power, things, again, that are not bad in and of themselves, but they are not the real things. They are not the foundations of our lives. And we're rewarded for learning to silence our inner selves and to just play along. So if we want to grow integrity between our inner and outer selves, it's going to be a countercultural move for all of us. I think that gives a little more meaning to Jesus when he says to the people that try to follow him, take up your crosses and follow me. He isn't saying that he wants to start a club or he wants to start an institution with us. He isn't telling us to accept a certain set of beliefs or obey a certain set of rules. He's telling us that the path to follow, the one of delight that bears fruit and does not wither, is the one that is connected deeply to the stuff that is inside of us, the places where we touch the heart of God. So, take a few more breaths. You can keep remembering that as we go through here. Thanksgiving is coming up before you know it, and you're going to be with all those goofy people again. There's that issue at work waiting for you tomorrow. Those kids at school that you do not want to see, but you will have no choice. Then we've got gun control, we've got racial equity, we've got police conduct, privacy rights, immigration, climate change, and a couple other things to work out. I think it's time to know who we are before we start telling other people who they should be and what they're supposed to think. And I think we can start here with these practices that take practice. And to remember this other word that is going to be important for us, horizon. Horizon. Talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This goal of integrity, of matching your outer self to your inner self, even hearing the voice of your inner self is a horizon. It is not a destination. You will not arrive. You cannot accomplish it. You will never be done. If you try to measure yourself on how well you're doing, you will always beat yourself up and always fail. But we can keep walking. We can enlarge our capacity. We can encourage one another. We can do this together. And we can always keep heading to that horizon, even though every step we take, it moves a step further away from us. Because it is a place where real life happens. So let's do that together. Amen. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.